Dear Lord, what a sad little life, Jay.
Now, on FUBAR Radio, it's Pulse of the Nation.
Well, I'm being shady-ish,
I'm being shady-ish. I'm going to find me, Darren!
Boring! You have to catch me first, I'm like a whippet.
Nah, it's not fun, I've got school.
Bus wankers!
And that was the fucking news.
Here's your host, Andrew White.
Hello, and welcome to Pulse of the Nation here on FUBAR Radio 4. The final time. Yes, sadly, this is our goodbye, our last episode. With me at the helm anyway, Pulse of the Nation may or may not continue on FUBAR Radio, but this is me giving up the desk, sadly saying goodbye to FUBAR. It's been a joyous ride. I've loved it a lot. I will talk more on FUBAR and leaving and all my thank yous at the end. But today we have another lovely show, a wonderful final show with two very special guests. To my right at the moment, we have the wonderful Tom Selinski, who I'll bring in just a moment. He'll be talking about his new podcast, All British Comedy Explained, with a previous guest. In fact, I think most capped guest on Pulse of the Nation, Abba Gleishman. And then after the break, we'll have a very special guest. I'll tease that to come in the future. But for now, as we do every week and as we have done for the whole year, I think my tenure here at Pulse of the Nation is exactly mirrored Donald Trump's term in office. I think our first episode was his inauguration. So Donnie has outlasted me. I have to say goodbye before we can say goodbye to Trump. But he made the headlines this week with accusations, rumours on the internet that he was there's no way to beat around the bush here. I have to just say it out loud. It feels weird in a radio setting, but we said worse on this show, that he sucked off Bill Clinton. That is the rumour online. I don't know if you've seen this, I don't know if you've heard this, but apparently in some leaked emails, there is a Polaroid evidence of Donald J. Trump giving former President Bill Clinton a blowjob. That is the rumour, and I'm inclined to believe it because Trump has since come out and demanded the release of the Epstein files, which I think is him saying, look, I may be a paedophile, and that may come out in the Epstein files, but it will prove one thing, that I am not gay. I think that's, just knowing Trump's how his mind works, I think that's sort of maybe his priority is like, I'd rather be proved a nonce than a homosexual. This is all hearsay, just a little bit of fun. And he said in demanding that the Republicans vote through the release of the Epstein files, he says he wants to get back to focusing on the important things, lowering taxes, rebuilding the military, and I quote, stopping transgender for everyone. Who knows what that means? Does he think there is some great scheme to trans the entire nation, that if the Democrats get in, there'll be a sort of pronoun by post system and you just have to deal with whatever you're given and transition in whichever direction you're deemed to by the government? I don't know what he means by stopping transgender for everyone, but that's what Trump promised. Closer to home in the UK, Shabana Mahmood, the Home Secretary, has been roundly criticised by all elements of the sort of political sphere, especially within her own party. This is really, we're starting to see the division of the Labour Party now, for announcing a policy that would see asylum seekers have their jewellery and valuables confiscated and sold to pay for their housing. It's been compared to, quite rightfully, Nazi policy, the reclamation of these poor people's things just to pay for a system that, you know, we are morally and, you know, internationally legally bound into providing. We have to provide asylum to those who are seeking it. And the only reason it's costing so much is because there's such a backup because you refuse to invest in the system. I wish I could be funny about this, but it was absolutely baffling and disgusting and abhorrent. And shame on Shabana Mahmood and shame on Keir Starmer and in the entirety of this Labour government. I cannot believe how much he has screwed the pooch with such a huge majority. He could have done anything he wanted and he's doing all this absolute bullshit. Election pandering. We're 4 years away from an election. Just, you know, try and go in some sort of direction of actual Labour policy rather than this shit. Anyway, in a more sort of lighter news, well, this isn't lighter news, but it's certainly lighter than the inhumane treatment of asylum seekers. Apparently, in some shops, toothpaste is now cost up to £23 per tube. A 75 milliliter tube is costing some punters £23. I know this is the high-end Colgate stuff, but, you know, not high-end, it's not, you know, luxury. Colgate, £23 for toothpaste, that is, I mean, absolutely obscene cost of living crisis we're getting into there. Who's buying that? Who's paying £23 for toothpaste? That is stupid. But I saw it. The reason I picked it out, well, not only because it was ridiculous, but also it reminds me of one of my favourite ever anecdotes, is that Colgate is actually a very hard sell in the Spanish-speaking world, because to conjugate verbs as an order, you put the te mei at the end of the word and remove the so it's colgar, which means to hang, and colgate means hang yourself. So colgate, written down in the Spanish world, does just sort of mean hang yourself. So I don't think it's as popular in Spain. They're certainly not paying £23 for it over there, I'll tell you that. And finally, I would just leave on this little tidbit that the Cambridge Dictionary word of the year is parasocial. For 2025, the word of the year is parasocial, which is maybe apt here on this radio show, and there's also a podcast. And bringing in my guest today, who is the host and originator of many a podcast, you might have a parasocial relationship with me. If you're a fan of one of his podcasts, you may have a parasocial relationship with him, the wonderful Tom Selinski. Hello.
Hello, thank you very much for having me.
An absolute pleasure. Yes, lots of news. Are you a very newsy person?
I mean, I used to be when there was occasional good news.
Yes,
but now it's so tempting just to look away, to not want to know.
I think that is the position I find a lot of guests in. They have to, it's just too much, it's too constant that you have to walk away. But you've got lots of other things to focus on. Not only, you know, you've got all these wonderful podcasts. The main which we'll focus on today is All British Comedy Explained. So tell us a bit about All British Comedy. That sounds like a weird sentence out of context. Tell us a bit about All British Comedy, please.
I will try. Yes, it's a sort of hubristic title.
Yeah.
But I'm very good friends with our mutual friend Abigail Ashimon, who, as you say, I think is the person who's been on the show most and is presumably tipped to take it over when you leave.
Yes, that would be actually, Kieran, you should message Abigail as my replacement if we've not got anyone lined up. That would be fantastic.
And I've known her for years, and she's a regular visitor to my monthly poker game. Mm-hmm. And Tom Tuck, I don't know if you know him.
Yes, yeah.
Comedy actor and writer. He and I were reminiscing about not the 9 o'clock news and comparing favourite sketches. And then Abigail basically said, what are you talking about? And it transpired not only has Abigail not seen Not the 9 o'clock News, she hasn't seen anything.
Mm-hmm.
So she is an American comedian, but she's lived in London for 11 years. She wants a career in comedy, and she's never seen The Two Ronnies or The Liver Birds or Fawlty Towers.
Oh, not even Fawlty Towers. Even,
I think she might have seen clips.
Right.
Occasionally, she's referenced being on a Channel 5 show where she was paid to be a talking head, and they would show her a clip, and then she would immediately become an expert on it.
Right, yeah. Classic Channel 5 patter. I like that. Yes. But Fawlty Towers, especially because there's so little of it, you could very easily consume it all.
One of the first things that struck her as we started talking about this was, wait, there's only 12 episodes? There's only 12 episodes of The Young Ones.
Mm.
I showed her The Day to Day, which hasn't been released yet, but we've announced our schedule for the first 8. Yeah. There's only 6 of those.
Yeah, wow, yeah. There's absolutely no excuse, really. Yeah, so it's Abigail is a fantastic comedian, and I imagine, well, I knowing her and her sense of humour, I imagine the results have been mixed in terms of her response to the sitcoms.
She did not like Monty Python's Flying Circus.
No.
And to be fair, Monty Python's Flying Circus, the original TV show, is kind of the Monty Python first draft.
Right, yeah.
This is not quite the same very experienced team that went on to do Life of Brian, Holy Grail, and even the famous sketches like Parrot Sketch or Room for an Argument, those got refined. Maybe the scripts weren't changed, but certainly the performances. When you see them do it on the original television show, it's the first time they're doing it in front of an audience.
Wow.
When you see them reprise it at the Hollywood Bowl or Drury Lane or the O2, they know exactly where the laughs are. They know exactly how to time it. They know exactly how to deliver it.
Yeah, that's so fascinating. Also, that's such an interesting sort of look at how TV has changed over the years, that these people were given the ability to do quite rough first drafts on TV and also given the opportunity to keep doing it as well.
Yes.
I sort of feel like if you fail nowadays, if you just fail in pilot, it's like, well, that's never making it to TV.
They were given 13 shows right off the bat.
Yeah, absolutely. A fascinating different time that I wish I'd come up in.
Yes.
Fair enough.
Would be nice, wouldn't it?
But yeah, it's I have listened to a few episodes. It's a very, very good, very good podcast. And this week you're tackling The Goon Show.
Yes.
Have you already filmed it?
Yes. It's all in the can.
Can you, a little spoiler on how?
Well, let's just say, if you think about how much of a stretch Monty Python's Flying Circus is, and now you consider listening to The Goon Show, and you don't have anything to watch, you might be able to reach your own conclusion about whether Abigail put this one on her shelf of fame or consigned it to the bargain bin.
Amazing. Okay, right. I will listen keenly. I really love The Goon Show. I was one of these sort of, because we had the library bus come round to our primary school, so I guess I was like 8, 9, 10, and they had these audio CDs of classic Radio 4 comedies, some that like I cannot find any reference to at all. The Museum of Everything with like Marcus Brigstocke and stuff. But one of them was The Goon Show, and I would listen to it a lot. I really, really liked it. But yeah, I wonder whether I'd still like it now. I'll have a look and listen to it. And I think I can draw my own conclusions as to whether Abergalia liked yes. it. But you must tune in to find out yourself. All British Comedy Explained. You can go to allbritishcomedy.com or just search All British Comedy Explained on your podcatcher of choice, at British Comedy Pod on the various socials, such as the modern world. We have to be all across different places with different names. I think this show is on Instagram, at Pulse of the _ Nation. I think on TikTok, it's Pulse of the Nation Show 1 or something like that. And then it's just everywhere. It's got a different title and it's all very convoluted.
Remember we had to memorize telephone numbers?
It's oh, yeah.
Like that. Maybe you don't. You're a bit younger than me, I think.
I've got my dad's and I've got my home landline.
Okay. From when you were growing up?
Yes. Yeah. That's about it. I had a go at remembering my partner's. But it's not stuck with me at all. Because when do you ever need it?
Yes.
Yeah. But yes, amazing. So that's the main sort of thing we're pushing people towards today. But you've done so much, Tom. You've covered all sorts of stuff.
I've been around.
You've been around. You've just released a second volume on your Red Dwarf book.
Yes, second and so far final.
Yeah.
Poor old Doug Naylor hasn't been able to get any more made.
Yes, yes. Although there is, as we were saying earlier, there is a script for potential final special.
So I think you might turn that into a novel.
Yeah. And is Red Dwarf on the slate for All British Comedy Explained, Series 2?
At some point. So not for Series 2, I don't think. I pretty much know what we're doing for Series 2. And then I have lots of ideas for future series. So mm-hmm. the theme for our first series was landmarks.
Nice.
These were the shows that changed the game, that kind of defined the contours of British comedy. And I sort of thought that, well, that'll be a good foundational layer.
Yes, that's a good choice.
And then I think... We haven't announced this yet, so a little exclusive for FUBAR listeners. I think season 2 is going to be sitcoms, because actually they're underrepresented in that first batch of 8.
Yeah,
so we'll do some of the big classic sitcoms. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know. I've got lots of ideas. We could do one on class. We could do one on satire. Mm-hmm. We could do double acts. There's lots of places we could
go. There's a whole sort of wealth of... This could just run and run and run, and yes. I hope it does, because I've enjoyed what I've heard, and I will especially enjoy listening to the Goon Show episode. Now, you're across so much media, podcast, sitcom, but also you're quite a keen cinephile.
Yes.
Yes. And I have some of your reviews here. Your Oscar reviews.
Oh, that I wrote?
That you wrote, yes. I've just got a few lines. I wonder whether you can identify the film from your review. Remarkably, I'm going to redact some names and facts. Remarkably, the team do find something newish to do with this perennial tale, even if it doesn't quite all gel. Remarkably, the team do find something newish to do with this perennial tale, even if it doesn't all quite gel. Shall I give you a clue of the team? Remarkably, Bradley Cooper and co. do find something newish to do with this perennial tale, even if it doesn't all quite gel. What Oscar nominee are we talking about there?
Oh, this is from my blog.
Yes.
Oh.
We've dug deep. We've got all sorts on you. What do you think? Bradley Cooper.
It's not Limitless, is it?
No.
That didn't win the Oscars, I don't think.
A Star is Born.
Oh, of course it is.
Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga, yes. Retelling of the Barbra Streisand classic. I'll give you a clue. We're staying in the world of musicals now. When it's good, it's amazing. But when it's bad, it's diabolical. The production design of all things almost kills it again.
Willy Wonka?
No.
Mary Poppins?
No.
Oh.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I really thought, when Kieran presented this to me, I said, oh, this would be easy. Tom will actually rattle through these.
It ought to be.
Yes. I'll put in some names, and that will probably give the game away. When it's good, brackets Anne Hathaway, it's amazing. But when it's bad...
Oh, Les Miserables.
Yeah, Russell Crowe, it's diabolical.
Yes. Oh, God, yes. My favourite line, if I can quote my own review, is Russell Crowe does so little to... understand the inner emotional state of his character, that when he throws himself off the pier, it looks less like a man in moral torment and more like one of those robots in Star Trek that gets confused to death by Spock or McCoy.
Yes, Russell Crowe does not paint himself in glory in that film. And I've always... Well, sort of parents just have that one actor that they really hate inexplicably. Yes. Russell Crowe is my dad's. He cannot stand the man. So
good in L.A. Confidential.
Yeah.
Such an amazing film.
Absolutely. It's not enough to redeem Russell in the eyes of my father. Right, we'll do two more and then we'll head into the break. Let's move away from musicals now. Efficient and a joy to look at, but hardly a work of art. Efficient and a joy to look at, but hardly a work of art.
It's a very pithy, which I suppose is
quite vague, yes. Yeah. What do you think, though?
Yeah, well, I think what the shows is I don't spend enough time rereading my own blog entries.
Well, I mean, I think I would think less of you if you did, if you were constantly scrolling through your own blog. I will say this is...
Is this Blade Runner 2049?
No, it is one of the biggest financially movies of all time. One of the biggest sort of box office hits.
Avatar?
It is indeed. Ah. Efficient and a joy to look at, yeah. But hardly a work of art. Does that remain true of the second Avatar? Did you think highly of it?
I mean, the first Avatar at least had the benefit of being new.
Yes.
The second one is sort of this again. And, yeah. You know, just as efficient, just as nice to look at, and less original.
Yes, yeah, so, it sort of lost its charm. And then one of the films of, maybe this was 2 years ago now, you can correct me when we get the answer, Bonkers Fantasy, which manages to consume the hand that's feeding it, practically up to the shoulder. That's a great line. I love that. Bonkers Fantasy, which manages to consume the hand that's feeding it, practically up to the shoulder.
I do remember writing that, and now I can't remember which film I'm referring to.
Very colourful, as you say, Bonkers Fantasy, based on an IP of a toy. We're going to go.
Oh, for? Barbie.
Yes, correct. It is Barbie.
God, I needed some help with that one.
Was that last year? Was that the year before?
Yes, 2 years ago, I think.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. How the hell has the time gone? Yeah. That is, as I was saying it, I was like, no, it was the year before. That's very upsetting that 2 years have surpassed since then. But I think... That wasn't too bad, considering you've written a lot about a lot of things and a lot of films. I think you did quite well there.
Thank you.
A respectable introduction to the show. When we come back, we'll have our special guest. We might talk to him about films as well. We'll have to see. But for now, we have a few adverts and interruptions, and we'll be back in about 3 minutes.
FUBAR Radio. Pulse of the Nation with Andrew White on FUBAR Radio.
Hello and welcome back to Pulse of the Nation. On my right, as before, the wonderful Tom Selinski. And to my left, a very special guest, my own partner of 3.5 years. Can you believe it? Rhys King, hello.
Hello.
How are you feeling?
Good, all right. It's nice to finally see it in person.
Yes, yeah. So you've suffered my many commutes into London and my disappearing on Tuesday afternoons. Do you listen to the show?
No.
No, yeah. Absolutely.
Honesty in a relationship is so important.
Yes, yeah. I wouldn't expect anything less. So this is your first time hearing an episode. It's being on it.
I thought you made it up.
I thought this wasn't real. You thought I was just having an affair or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, because your partner's a comedian as well, Deborah Frances White.
Yes.
Tom. Do you listen to her output?
Well, I also produce her podcast.
Oh, well, then that's quite integral, yes.
I think I listen to more of The Guilty Feminist than she does. As far as she's concerned, when she's finished performing it, she's off. She's on to the next thing.
It just magically appears in the podcast feed. Yes.
I'm the one who has to go through it and take out all the libelous stuff.
Is there a lot of libelous stuff?
Oh, constant. Come to live shows, listeners, because you hear all sorts of stuff that we cut out of the podcast.
That's where you get the juicy bits. Exactly. Yes, yeah. I do filter things through you a little bit. No, obviously, you're not doing literal production, but I do go, shall I say this? Shall I do that? And you go, that's not funny. Don't say that.
Yeah.
You shoot down quite a lot of ideas.
Do you talk you about Rhys on stage?
Yes. Yeah.
Did you know that?
Yes. Yeah. You get quite, not annoyed, but protective that I'm doing bits about you that are by you. You'll say a joke about yourself or about your heritage or whatever, and then I'll say, well, I'll do that on stage.
Well, I'm worried you're going to become one of those like white male comedians who like marries a black woman so we can do a black set. You
know? Yeah, those are the boundaries we've created for ourselves. I absolutely can never do that. Although I did try, it never really quite worked, but I did try a joke on stage. It's just like... if you're worried about me talking about these subjects, it's fine because my partner's actually gay. So there's sort of like a little rug pull there.
Yep,
that never quite worked. But yes, welcome to the show. You, like Abigail, you have quite an American cultural sphere around you.
Yeah.
So you, did any of those names sound familiar to you? The Goon Show or anything like that?
No.
You had not seen any of them?
No.
Well, you should listen to the podcast then. You'd be the prime candidate, really.
I would be, wouldn't I?
Yeah. What British sitcom have you? You said you'd seen Red Dwarf.
And like an episode or two.
An episode or two, okay.
While scrolling through TV.
Yeah. This is, yeah, so I suppose in the olden days, 10 years ago, instead of scrolling through TikTok, you would literally just channel hop. And you're quite, this is going to sound very cruel, but you're quite inattentive. In like the very few things that you'll sit down and deliberately watch.
True.
So you just had Red Dwarf on in the background.
Yeah, I mean, part of the issue is age, I do think, because they don't really make new sitcoms as much anymore, do they?
Yeah. Well, what did you say about the new Red Dwarf script that they said that nothing, no comedy works on the channel except yours, And
so they're getting rid of all scripted comedy, including yours.
Yeah,
that was Dave's logic.
It's a pretty brutal world out there. Yes, I miss the world of TV that I was never even alive for, where you could just be given money to do stuff. But while you are lacking in sitcoms, you are a big horror film fan.
Yeah, I am.
And you do have your own podcast.
Yes, literally dead horror podcast.
Yeah. I think between us all, there are a lot of podcasts floating about. Because yes. I also had this, obviously, and Trusty Hogs.
Oh, my God.
You're literally dead. And
I only have the one.
Yeah, true. You're very respectable. we're double dipping all over the place. Yes. Yeah.
Sorry, Reese. Carry on.
Tell us about Literally Dead, please.
It's a horror podcast with me and my friend, Daya Jerry. We just both filmmakers. She's an editor. I'm an actor. And we have a lot of opinions. And we like to have fun. And we're queer. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's very fun. I fully recommend it. The Halloween specials, you were in full costume, full painted green face as Elphaba. But I'm pretty sure it wasn't face paint because it sort of cemented for the entirety of the episode. You're just there like talking through gifted teeth because you can't move your face.
But it was worth it. Yeah, our reviews are much different than yours.
Right.
Hearing yours is, you have a brain.
No. Yeah, so a different approach.
Quite sure what to say to that.
Yeah. are you into horror at all, Tom?
I don't mind it. It's not one of the genres that I seek out. Mm. And occasionally I can get a bit weirded out by some really grotesque stuff. My podcast companion, John Dorney, tells me that I should definitely watch The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which he said is one of the most simultaneously hilarious, disturbing, emotional, spectacular things he's ever seen. And I just can't bring myself actually to call that one up and put it on. But I've definitely seen some and loved them. I remember some of the classics, like Nightmare on Elm Street, I think in particular, is absolute gold. And that was one where even some of the sequels are pretty good. The third and fourth are actually pretty okay as well.
Yeah.
Before it becomes a complete parody of itself.
Yes, I suppose these things that sort of, they're almost inherently parody anyway, the sort of hot horror genre is, but then it sort of devours itself a little bit.
Do you think there's a queer component to some of those, especially the fantasy horror films, where there's like a sort of staid, straight, normal life, and it, which gets invaded by these chaotic forces that often seem to be having a lot more fun? Mm. Know what I mean?
100%. Horror is so queer. We talk about that a lot, actually. But and you brought up Nightmare on Elm Street, and I think it's the sequel that's actually regarded as quite a queer film because it's one of the only horror films that sort of has a final boy.
Oh, right.
But yeah, a lot of the time the villains are, as you said, it's sort of like a perversion of the norm, an outside force breaking. Mm. Yeah.
And they're often, as you say about the final boy, normally it's the final girl who is this pure virgin sort of everything that the Christian nationals
and
sort of
would often
love.
You know, creates sort of like a caricature of like society and like the norms. So you have, like you said, like the virgin, and then you have the fool, and you'll have like the slut, and then you'll have the jock, and you just have these different characters that we see in real life, and it just turns them into jokes. And then
it's quite a lot of crossover in comedy and horror, because they're both sort of like looking at society a little bit from the outside, and they both have this thing where there's a defined reaction. Like in horror, you have a scare, and I guess in comedy, you have the joke. And I think they're also both quite overlooked by, awards boards and
horror in particular.
Yeah,
comedies occasionally sneak through, but the closest thing to a horror film that's ever won Best Picture is The Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah,
which is like borderline. Would you consider that a horror film? Have you seen Silence of the Lambs?
No, it's a thriller.
Yeah,
fair enough. So yes, I think we're in similar realms, even though you're worlds apart. I was about to say you with your brain and you without.
He loves you.
I do dearly. I do.
Yeah.
It's gonna be a long car ride home. Now this is technically a newsy show. I know you don't particularly like the news or engage with it a lot, but we are going to go into the lighter side of the news. We're not going to be covering the the death sentence of Sheikh Hasina, for example. I don't know if anyone saw that, the Bangladeshi ex-prime minister. The only reason I know about this, and I promised him I'd talk about it, my friend Shahid, who is the security guard at Tesco Extra, the petrol station, Reese thinks it's weird that I'm friends with the security guard at our local Tesco. But I just think it's nice to talk to people.
Friendly guy.
Yeah. Anyway, he's Bangladeshi. And Sheikh Hasina, he said, has been, for the last 15 years, undermining the Bangladeshi people and education system because she's in cahoots with the Indian government. He got a little bit into conspiracy theory. I won't repeat all of it. But the point is, she was finally ousted last year. And in absentia, a Bangladeshi court has sentenced her to death. But she is being protected by the Indian government. So that's quite big, major international news, yes, which isn't necessarily being covered. But that's not what we're here to discuss. We're here to discuss the fun stuff, starting with the pub quiz cheating scandal that has rocked the nation. Have you seen this at all?
I haven't, I must confess.
So, a pub quiz team in Manchester, the same team kept winning this prize of a £30 bar tab. So, it's not high stakes. And it was discovered via some sort of like jiggery pokery from the quiz setters that they were using their smartwatch to like whisper in and ask Siri the questions. And they'd been cheating for weeks. And finally, it was uncovered in this sort of like spy like sting. Are you a fan of a pub quiz?
I love a pub quiz, yes.
Amazing. We have some pub quiz questions for you.
My poor showing on specialist subject, my own things I've written on my own blog,
yes,
notwithstanding, I do like a pub quiz, yes.
Good, yes. Well, this is more general knowledge. I won't make you remember the recesses of your mind and everything you've ever written. Don't worry, this is more general knowledge. We've pub quiz before.
Yeah, we did well.
We did, well, yes. We'd often be a two-person team and we go to the Elephant in East Finchley and we won two or three times. And then we go straight to the... You know, it was quite a small, like, you know, it wasn't a massive pool. So we'd win, like, I don't know, 24 quid. And we'd drive to the Tesco Extra and buy Ben and Jerry's or something. It was quite sweet, quite gentle. Check
the security guard on the way out.
Yes, yeah, exactly. But we never cheated.
It's so kind of weirdly pathetic.
It really, for £30 bar tab.
For anything.
Yeah, for anything,
but,
especially.
I mean, even if it was 100 quid, like... I can sort of understand the mindset of like a professional con man,
mm-hmm,
who's essentially making a living out of defrauding people.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't admire it, but I get it.
Yeah.
But what is in it for these people? What?
Well, what does it take to cheat then? How much to make you cheat?
I see, where's the cutoff?
Yeah.
I don't think I would ever.
No.
Yeah. Because I think the joy of a quiz... If I'm entering into a quiz, even if it's like a pretty hefty entry fee and a decent... a prize fund, is the fun of the quiz. It's the remembering things.
Yeah, one of the first bits of professional writing I did, and it wasn't even professional in the sense I was getting paid for it, but I was like, it was a regular thing.
Hmm.
Around about 2000, with a couple of friends, I started an online satirical netzine,
right,
called The Brains Trust. And every 2 weeks we put out a new issue, and there was a small group of us who were putting, and then people started sending us stories, and the team started to grow. And then we got contacted by an Australian online satirical netzine saying several of your stories are exact copies of several of our stories.
Oh, wow.
And a member of our circle who just felt the need to try and keep up had been pilfering stories from this Australian site in the hope we wouldn't notice. And it was just, again, it's just so pathetic.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, there's. I really like this sketch group called Auntie Donna. You maybe.
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, they're great.
And their first live show that I went to see in Edinburgh, the whole narrative was that one of the members, Zach, couldn't write a sketch. All his sketch ideas were really bad. And then he finally got a good one. And obviously they're like playing up, like, oh my God, it's amazing. It's the best sketch. We'll end with it. We'll close with it. And then in the story, they find a VHS and they plug it in and then they reenact the exact same sketch in French. And then the idea is that he's stolen it from this French 1970s sketch show. But yeah, it is just so pathetic. Obviously, that's satire and a joke.
Sure, sure, yes. Yeah.
It just highlights how pathetic and cringe. You hate cringe.
Mm.
The embarrassment of being caught out in doing that. That was you can watch as much horror as you like. I'm speaking for you here, but...
Yeah.
But The Office would just leave you screaming and running out of the room.
No, it does.
Yeah.
Amazing. Dismemberment, fine. Social embarrassment, no thank you.
Yeah,
my
absolutely.
Tip is to mute the screen. If you watch it in, you know, muted, yeah.
You can sort of see what's going on, but you don't have to experience it fully. There's multiple times when we're watching sitcoms and I'm all of a sudden it's paused and Reese is just there like, I can't, I need a minute. And I just have to sit for 2 minutes until it's left your system.
I mean, I suppose it's true that a demon is never going to come out of hell and slit you from throat to groin, but you might be caught in a lie.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it feels realer.
That's a very good point, actually. I sympathise more now that I've heard that. This has sort of been like marriage counselling. It's been very good. Thank you, Tom.
And how do you feel about that?
I feel fine. Everything is fine. I've got two little bits of stimulus here. Some pub quiz team names that are, they're all very, like, you know, Christopher Christopherson, the Quisitor. I don't even quite get that one. Christopher Christopherson.
Christopherson.
Oh, I see.
Taking us back to A Star Is Born.
Right. Oh, I see. I see.
He
yes.
was the star of the 1970s version opposite Barbra Streisand.
Yes.
See, I do know things about The Star Is Born.
Indeed. Well, I'm sadly, there are no Star Is Born questions on my quiz. Quisitor, Les Quisirables, Let's Get Quizzical. And then obviously a few like pointy ones, Know It Ales, Smarty Pints. I like those more because you hear the quiz ones a lot, yes. Quiz Team Aguilera, but Smarty Pints and Know It Ales, I quite like that. A little nod to the pub. But I have some. I have five pub quiz questions.
Is it a competition?
Yes.
Just going to see if my watch, just check the time here. Okay, yeah, all right, so I'm ready.
Very suspicious sort of side eye from me there. We'll start with the news. This is which actor, after 45 years on our screens, has won his first Oscar this week.
Buzz.
Obviously, it is... Oh, yeah, go on.
Tom Cruise.
It is indeed. Oh, I don't have the thingy up. Oh, do I not have the hotkeys up? There we go. Correct. Yes, correct, Tom. It is Tom Cruise won an honorary Oscar. Did you know that?
Would
you have got that? Okay.
Are we buzzing in? Or are we waiting for you to finish?
Well, this one... We'll do buzz in, I think. Okay. But this one is a number, so I'll get you to both give a number.
Okay.
How long, this is history, how long did the Hundred Years' War last? How long did the Hundred Years' War last? We'll go, as you're a point ahead, Tom, what do you reckon?
86.
86 years, what do you think? How?
78.
It was actually 116 years.
Oh.
Yes, it was a very long war.
They lowballed it.
Yes, they really did. 116 years, the Hundred Years' War. You'll remember that for your next pub quiz. That has come up a few times. Which of these cities, this geography now, is furthest west? Bristol, Cheltenham or Liverpool? Bristol, Cheltenham or Liverpool? Which of these cities is furthest west? Bristol, Cheltenham or Liverpool? I'll get you to guess first, Reese.
Bristol.
Do you think Bristol's
furthest? I was going to say Bristol. Bristol's next to Wales, isn't it?
Bristol is right next to Wales. However, Liverpool is also right next to Wales in terms of Wrexham. And yes, if you actually look at the map, Liverpool is the most westernly city.
Is that the centre of Liverpool and the centre of Bristol, or the westernmost point of Liverpool or the westernmost point of Bristol?
That's okay. We're getting into... Yes, there's some technicalities that I'll get Kieran to get on the Google Maps.
I don't cheat. I just argue my way to the point.
Yes, I have done that before as well, haven't I? A bit of digging. Okay, well, look, at the moment, you're still winning 1-0.
Okay, you're right.
And depending on what Kieran discovers in his research booth, you might get an extra point there, both of you. Question four, this is nature now. Which animal has the heaviest brain? Which animal in the animal kingdom has the heaviest brain?
Got to be the blue whale, hasn't it? Because it's the largest animal that's ever existed.
Blue whale, what do you think, Chris?
An elephant.
I'm tempted to give you a half point because the answer is actually sperm whale.
Okay.
Sperm whale has the heaviest brain. I will give you a half point, Tom.
Bless you.
Just mainly so that you don't go and argue about the Liverpool point again.
I thought that was too obvious.
Well, the blue whale.
To just pick the biggest animal.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. So the sperm whale's not the biggest animal, but it does have the biggest brain. Mm. Yeah. There's something about, I don't know, thinking with...
Are they smarter?
I don't know, actually. Who's smarter? Can we get that as an answer, actually? I won't make you do any more geography. You're sort of drawing like VAR off sidelines between Liverpool and
Bristol.
Do we
now have to set a pub quiz for a blue whale and a sperm whale?
That's the only way.
Make sure
we
take their Apple Watches away from them before this quiz begins.
Yes, those famous whale Apple Watches. Yes, but is the sperm whale smarter just because that's a bigger brain? If we could find that out. And we go to our final question now, which is a music round. I'm going to play the introduction of a song. And you have to tell me what is the name of the song and who is the artist. I'll keep playing it until somebody buzzes in. Just yell out to buzz in. Okay, here we go.
Oh, buzz.
Yeah.
It's Shirley Bassey, Goldfinger.
It is indeed.
Thank you for doing a movie song.
You're very welcome. Well, I actually had sort of lent that purposely towards Reese because I played it for him in the car. In the car on the way up.
It was the first time I heard it.
Yeah, I started singing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. It's classic.
I'm getting... Kieran in my ear says that the big brains of sperm whales do not correlate with their intelligence.
Right.
So they're not necessarily smarter than the blue whale. But yeah, on the way up, I started singing Goldfinger. Yeah. And Reese was like, what's that? And I played it for you and said it's Shirley Bassey classic. And
Well, you should have played the bit where she said Goldfinger.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, that would have given the game away a little bit. What song is this? Goldfinger.
Composed by John Barry, lyrics by Leslie Bricusse, I want to say.
Oh my God, I'll give you some bonus points, Tom, if that's correct. Let me skip to the end.
You have the brain.
Yeah.
My auntie was a blue whale.
Composed by John Barry and... Lyrics by Leslie Brooks. Yes, absolutely. There is an extra writer credited.
No, Anthony Newley and Leslie Brooks.
Okay, bang. Okay, I'm going to have to give you two bonus points for that, which does leave you at four and a half to Reese's nothing. I'm sorry, that was quite a romping victory there. Congratulations, so and not an Apple Watch in sight. Ba-ding-ding. lovely stuff. Right, we're going to head into another break now. Now, the thing about this show is the time goes so quickly. I struggle with the timekeeping. I've got to hit two breaks and we end bang on 2:55. You said in the realm of All British Comedy Explained that there was a timekeeping story to do with That Was the Week.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So That Was Week There was this groundbreaking sketch show in the early 60s, which did amazing satire of the kind that really hadn't been seen on television before. The presenter was David Frost, the producer was Ned Sherrin. It went out live on BBC Two. The pubs would empty, so everyone could run home and see what they'd been saying. And the first series, if it was going well and the audience seemed up for it, Ned Sherrin would throw in a few extra items because it was the last show on BBC Two, so it didn't matter when it ended.
Yeah.
And if the audience seemed a bit tired or they were kind of running out of material, he would end it a little bit early. When it came back for its second series, the BBC had scheduled repeats of the very bad American TV spin-off of The Third Man to go after it.
So now they had to finish it.
The TV spin-off of.
Really?
Which was terrible.
Yeah.
And they'd shown it before anyway. So Ned Sherrin and co were incensed by this. Mm-hmm. Now they had to finish at whatever time it was, 11 o'clock. So somebody managed to find transcripts of the episodes. And so at the end of the first couple of editions of the second series of That Was the Week That Was, David Frost announced that the next program would be The Third Man, gave a complete synopsis of the episode that was about to be broadcast, thus spoiling it for all the viewers. And when he'd done that two or three times, the BBC took The Third Man off the air and let them go on as long as they wanted again.
Amazing. Oh, glorious bit of pettiness. And again, just speaks to this era of TV that you could not get away with nowadays.
Absolutely couldn't.
That's amazing. I wonder what is the next show after us, Kieran? It'll be Screen Talk. Well, that's very much in your realm.
Listen,
yes.
Maybe you should just refuse to leave the studio.
Yes, yeah. This barricade is yourself. Show. Yeah,
absolutely. Take us hostage.
I wonder, because do I have the power to stay on air in this, Kieran? Technically, okay. Right, well, here we go. Let's see how long today's show goes. I don't think we'll be finishing at 2:55, actually, but I will, because it pays the bills. Go to the adverts for now. 3 minutes. We'll see you in a second.
Pulse of the Nation with Andrew White on FUBAR Radio.
Hello and welcome back. I went to start the episode and then realised that the mic was not in front of my mouth. So if you heard sort of fumbled rush, that was me going, oh crap.
People that was like a judo move. That was like something out of The Matrix.
I did sort of, yeah. It was quite impressive. Have a little look on our video. There is a YouTube channel for this. So yeah, there was, well, maybe it'll appear as a clip. It'll be our viral moment. Mm. Yeah. Now, speaking of viral moments, I'm going to have a clip on the screen here. This is from the Yorkshire, well, it will be explained. This is from The Guardian. If you just click... Oh, yes, let me put the Zoom fader up. What we're hearing is the World Black Pudding Throwing Championships. Lots of consternation from the crowd.
Well, basically, I am coordination. That's what it is. You've got to just, like, knock them puddings off. Simple.
Definitely. So what that was... the winning athlete, if we can use that word, of the Yorkshire Pudding Black Pudding Throwing Competition. So we heard the audience going, whoa, all that sort of stuff. What, I mean, would one of you like to venture a description of what you saw on the screens? Rhys?
Well, I saw a Yorkshire pudding.
You saw, yeah, there was a big Yorkshire pudding. Suspended.
On some scaffolding?
Yes.
And what are they throwing? Bags of marbles?
No, they're throwing black pudding.
Exactly that.
Yeah, black pudding?
Yes.
Do you like black pudding?
I do.
Yeah. Do you like black pudding?
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I hadn't considered using it as a carefully coordinated missile before, but yes. Sure, why not?
So this is the black pudding throwing competition, where there are giant Yorkshire puddings suspended on a platform in midair from some sort of scaffolding, roughly at the height of street lighting, I guess. And they are throwing the competitors black puddings up into the sky.
This is a bar bet that's gone out of hand, hasn't it?
It really, yes, it truly is. Just, it's clearly an annual tradition that has just grown out of absolute nonsense. Sort of in the realm of like the cheese rolling competition or something like that. The aim is to get the black pudding to land into the Yorkshire pudding so much so that it dislodges it from the platform. It's as simple as that. And I absolutely loved the athlete describing it. Let me play that again.
Well, basically, I am coordination. That's what it is. You've got to just, like, knock them puddings off. Simple.
And that there really is sort of a great advert for the media training of sports personalities, because that wasn't Jed Dennis there, the winner of the competition this year, wasn't particularly articulate. But how do you think you'd fare in this Yorkshire pudding throwing competition?
Listen, I'm a straight white man. My operating assumption is that anything I haven't seen before, I'll be able to have a reasonable go at. Sure. Yeah, bring it on.
What about you, Reese?
I have pretty good aim.
You do have very good aim. Yeah. Do you have the power, though? Because that's quite high.
Yeah, I think I do.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, well, I do better than you.
Yeah. Wow, okay. That is fighting talk.
You're not very good.
And we have a dozen Yorkshire puddings in the studio.
I do wish, this is sort of, because we're on the fourth floor of the busworks here. I've just stocked the studio.
Is this how high?
It doesn't matter. I'm not going to. Sorry?
Is this how high it would be?
Yeah, roughly. From street level up to here. We could do this. If Kieran stands out the window with his hand in place of a Yorkshire pudding, and we'll get some sort of black pudding weighted thing, we could technically settle this, but it wouldn't be broadcast. So I guess there's no point to it. If you're not broadcasting something, what is the point of it really?
A Yorkshire pudding falls. Yeah, no one's broadcasting this.
The age-old question. It really is a philosophical dilemma. But there we go. That caught our eye. And I particularly loved Jed Dennis describing how to win at the competition, which is, of course, eye-hand coordination. Yeah. But in the world of real sport, not to denigrate the Yorkshire pudding throwing competition, neither of you are football people.
Not really.
But you may have seen, I don't know if this was crossed into your feeds, either of you, the sexist Sky Sports Halo TikTok channel. So Sky Sports have created a separate TikTok channel to promote women's football. They called it Halo. And in the bio, it was Sky Sports' little sister account. And all of the text and fonts and captions were in pink with sparkles. And it was sort of playing on matcha tea and, you know, this sort of girly pop energy. And it got shut down after 3 days because the internet absolutely blasted it as a sexist sort of fail.
What's happening?
What do you mean?
Well, Monster Energy Drink did it as well.
What, they did like a Monster for girls?
They've just launched, yeah. And it's called Flirt.
Flirt?
And they're pastel colours with a daisy on the front.
Yeah, it is sort of, it does, well, we're sort of straying into the realm of guilty feminists here more than.
Well, I'm sort of pleased it got shut down. I mean, I'm so conditioned now to hearing bad news and to hearing, you know, from the manosphere.
Yes.
I'm actually heartened to hear that the internet turned on it, because I think I was 50-50 as you were telling the story about whether this was going to end with everybody loving it or not.
No, yes, absolutely. It was torn to shreds.
Good.
And there was it sort of reignited calls, because there's always been from female football fans, as in fans of women's football, a call for broadcasters to give them more airtime. Mm. And it sort of reignited that to be like, yeah, but don't patronise us. Do it right, which is good. Yes, I hope that this will bear some useful fruit for the women's game. The one post saw a clip of Manchester City player Ryan Cherki and Erling Haaland combining for the latter to score against Bournemouth, given the caption, "How the matcha and the hot girl walk combo hits." So that's sort of, I mean, it's not just like girly pop, it's like brain rot girly pop. So patronising, appealing to a Gen Z demographic that doesn't exist, I don't think, in my
it's
mind.
It's very weird when people have been begging for something for so long, you know, more airtime, more focus on women's sports, and they take so long to do it, and then they finally do it, put in the money and the attention and the time, and they do it in the one way people didn't want them to.
Yeah, it's just an absolute classic, really. Neither of you particularly football people, but that's a pretty obvious own goal.
Yep.
There we go.
Yeah,
put that on the
nice.
On the front of the Sun newspaper. there was lots of good news today, actually. I was listening to the radio. I always listen to, I realise I've become an old man, because I got a phone call at 1:01 p.m. and my first thought was, I was listening to the news. So I had to take this phone call and delay my listening of the news. But there's lots of good news. The government has, as much as they've done a lot of crap recently, such as Shabana Mahmood's latest announcement, they have banned reselling of tickets at a higher rate than the face value.
Oh.
So that is being cracked down on. And Ofcom are investigating companies that have added fees at checkout. So there is a move towards some positivity. There is some nice news, which I guess sort of brings me slowly to the close of the show and my final thoughts on Pulse of the Nation. Before I do, though, because I've been consuming the news every week in pursuit of this show. But before I get on my high horse about all that, I'd love to reiterate the plugs of my two fantastic guests there, and thank you both for coming on. We'll start with Rhys, as you have just the single podcast to plug. We'll start with your show, Literally Dead, at Lit Dead Pod.
Yeah.
So you can follow that with the wonderful Day of Jerry. What episode would you recommend starting with?
Episode 3.
Which was episode 3? What film was that?
It was the Halloween episode.
That was the first Halloween episode. It's very good. And I used to have a podcast studio in Soho, so it was very well produced. nowadays it's just done on our sofa. And I would love to keep doing it. If this radio show was on my sofa, I'd keep doing it. I love FUBAR. I'm not quitting for any other reason than commuting. So yes, Literally Dead, at Lit Dead Pod. You can also follow Rhys at, I just remembered what your Instagram handle is, at Lightskin Batty Boy. That's not my words. Tom, hello Tom. You have got so many wonderful projects.
Yes.
You are a man of many hats. Obviously, British Comedy Pod, at British Comedy Pod, All British Comedy Explained with the wonderful Abigailia. Your film podcast is
Best Pick. Still going. We'll be reviewing Anora on an episode coming out between now and the end of the year. I've got a play on at the King's Head called In the Print. And I've got another project, a wonderful show by my podcast cohort, Jessica Regan. Mm-hmm. We took this to Edinburgh, the Edinburgh before last. It's called 16 Postcodes. And it is a beautiful show. If you're a fan of storytelling and stories told with great wit and charm and humour, Jessica's show is fantastic, and that's going to be on at the King's Head end of February, beginning of March.
Yes,
next year,
25th February to the 8th of March at the King's Head. 16 Postcodes. That sounds, maybe we should travel in and see that. We don't get to see enough plays, really. No. We go to see a lot of musicals. I've got some of your reviews here of musicals, but yes. Broadly, how do you feel about the stage musical?
Oh, I love a good stage musical. Yeah,
that's good. Okay, good. Yeah, I'm glad.
Yeah. Absolutely.
A lot of campy fun. 16 Postcodes at the King's Head. Many podcasts and indeed books. Obviously, you've got your Red Dwarf. Is there a title for the Red Dwarf?
It's called Red Dwarf Discovering the TV Series, which is the slightly bland title imposed upon me by the publisher.
Yes.
But they just want something descriptive, and they want the name of the IP on the jacket.
So yes, yeah, of course. Something.
I wanted to call it Steptoe in Space, but they weren't having that.
Steptoe in Space. Yeah. I like that. That's a lot of fun. Volume 2 is coming out very soon. Maybe I'm being fired, actually. Maybe my lack of radio professionalism has finally caught up with me and I'm being fired for my rambling on the radio. But yeah, thank you so much for coming in, Tom.
Absolutely.
Do go check out some of those projects because, a wonderful, intelligent man with lots of fingers in lots of wonderful pies. Cool. In that case, all it really remains to say is to lots of thank yous for the last year of Pulse of the Nation here on FUBAR Radio. I dearly love the station. I dearly love doing it. I hope to return to radio in some capacity. Maybe if Rhys and I ever move back to London, a conversation we should have in the car home. We only left London because we really love this thing called disposable income. I don't know if you've heard of it.
I've heard of it.
Yes, yeah.
I've never come across it myself, but I understand some people rate it very highly.
Well, Portsmouth, very affordable, and we can buy all the matcha lattes we want with our disposable income. I miss London, but more importantly, I will miss doing FUBAR Radio. Maybe I'll return someday, and definitely I've enjoyed my first foray into broadcast. So many people to thank, so many guests. My first ever co-host, Max Fulham, Sanjay Arif, who helped do the pilot with me, Abigailia Shaman, who has been my most called upon guest, mainly because she is walking distance to the studio.
She's got a new podcast, though, hasn't she?
She has got a new podcast, All British Comedy Explained.
Oh,
well worth checking out. I don't just call her because she's nearby. She's also very, very funny. So do go check out All British Comedy. And thank you to everyone who's ever come on the show, all of my guests, my co-hosts, all of the viral stars that have joined us. Of course, to the wonderful team here at FUBAR, Yaz, Hugh, Kate, Julia, Duncan, Ruth, Tyler, and the man, the myth, the legend. I couldn't do it without him, the wonderful Kieran. Thank you so much, Kieran, for everything over the last year. I often put words into his mouth as he's behind that glass panel. He can't sort of defend himself, and I make him stand by some of the most racist, horrific, anti-Irish things that have ever been uttered on broadcast radio, but he's put up with a lot and he's really made the show what it is. So thank you, Kieran. Thank you to you, the listener. This show will remain in archive on YouTube, on podcast. Take care. Goodbye.